or in the newspapers. And the folks who don't want to be seen, families with children don't want to be seen. Most folks don't even want somebody else to know that they're homeless. Working folks, they don't want folks to know that they're homeless. And we know, that you and I know, that 25% of the folks who are homeless are working. They simply can't afford a place to live. So my sense is it needs to be, in terms of the movement, there needs to be a much more visible representation of those folks that are clearly defined by all of us as worthy of service. And as we begin to provide and begin to attack the issues surrounding affordable housing, we're going to see everyone benefit from that.
Now, your work in the community in Santa Cruz has also gone specifically into the area of shelter. What shelter is available? I think you were instrumental in helping bring to the city council the data necessary to declare what they called a shelter emergency in 1990 and 1995.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about those two acts and something about the shelter available in Santa Cruz County?
Well, we just recently completed a shelter availability survey. The result, and we surveyed providers of shelter services to find out if they, in fact, were turning people away from emergency shelter. And then we surveyed also those organizations that we know refer shelterless people to emergency shelter to get their take on whether or not they felt that they were the referrals they made were successful. And we also surveyed shelterless people themselves. And the results were that it's pretty clear that, yes, people are being turned away from shelters. All of the shelters turn people away, including families with children, disabled people, elderly people, and that they have waiting lists of anywhere from a week to 2 months, and that the referring agencies have various levels of success in getting people into shelter, and that the experiences of shelterless people are that, yes, they are turned away from shelter because the shelters are full. I think what we've done then is simply establish that no, we don't have enough shelter for youth on the street. No, we don't have enough.
Well, let's look a little bit about the figures, since your survey recently may give us some insight into this. I realize I catch you at home and you may not have all the specifics, but tonight, if I were homeless and I were seeking shelter, first of all, how many shelter spaces theoretically would be available if nobody were in them?
I think it's about 425.
Is that in the city or in the county?
That's countywide.
Countywide, and so the county is.
And that includes the armories.
Okay, and if we look at how many of those spaces are likely to be filled up before I arrive by people who are, let's say, in programs. And now, in terms of emergency shelter, walk-in shelter, how many spaces are likely to be available tonight, let's say, even if the armory is available? And I guess the armory, becomes regularly available in December, is that right, generally? Or?
There's a formula. It starts in November.
Right, with the cold and wet weather. But when does it become open every night?
December.
December, right. So tomorrow, let's say,
it's open now because we've already met the requirements, which are 50 degrees and rain, 50 degrees or less and raining, mm-hmm. or 40 degrees and not raining.
Right.
So, I mean, they've been open.
So, with the armory open, how many spaces are there for a person walking off the street?
You said if they were all empty.
First, if they were all empty.
Now to reality.
Now reality-wise.
The reality is we're going to fill up most of those. During the period of time just after the armories open, it takes a while for people to get that fact. And so for a period of a week or two, you wouldn't have a problem. By December, they're operating at maximum, and the odds are that you'd have to be there real early. I think you have to be there like 3:30 or 4 o'clock to sign up every day. And it's a crapshoot. And as people start being turned away, they begin to give up on finding shelter. And that's one of the things we found in the survey, is that once people are turned away from shelter because they're full, they tend not to try to come back again. They give up on it, or the scuttlebutt on the street is that no, their shelters are all full. Don't even try. And so at that point, it actually becomes a little easier to get in. Mm-hmm. People give up. As people give up trying to get in, it becomes a little easier to get in.
Now, the city council last winter, when homeless activists presented concerns that people were not able to get into shelter, even those seeking it, the response of, I believe it was either Mayor Matthews or Mayor Rotkin, was, hey, people, there were only two or three nights. A council member Kennedy said only two or three nights in two or three years have there been circumstances where people have sought shelter and not been able to get it. What's your sense about that kind of stat?
The survey contradicts that. That's simply the fact that people are turned away.
So your understanding is that in fact is not necessary.
And there are people out there who need it who have given up trying to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know that if they all, it's an inverse function of the availability. I mean, the estimates from the Human Resources Agency are that there are 3,000 to 3,500 homeless people at any given time in Santa Cruz County, and that there are only, say, 440 at the most shelter beds.
And that's Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board in a very eloquent and extensive interview, which actually we have the remains of, and there's even more of it, but unfortunately, we don't have time to conclude it now. I will indeed listen to requests. If people want to give me a call off air at 423-HUFF and ask me to play the rest of that interview, I could do that on Sunday when we come back at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. You're listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio, as some call it. Freak, free, same old stuff. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert, and I'm giving you, I'm going to try to cram into the last 10 minutes a couple of updates that I think are important. We've done a lot of talking in the last 3 weeks about Happy John Dine, his killing, the investigations or lack of investigation into the killing, the media treatment of the whole thing, and so forth. And I kind of want to update those who've been following the case as well as let those who haven't been following the case know what's going on. Happy John Dine, of course, was shot by Officer Connor Carey dead on November 12th. The DA and the police chief claimed it was because Dine was holding a toy gun in his hand, actually had pulled one out of his pack or his clothing, and pointed it at Officer Carey at Front and Soquel Streets, right at the bus stop there, about 6:45 on that Wednesday evening. Police chief and the district attorney came to that decision within 15 hours after the shooting. And what struck me, because I was on the scene 2 or 3 hours later and began interviewing witnesses, was the witnesses all had a different story, that Happy John was standing there, essentially not engaging in hostile or threatening behavior. Actually, one witness said he did say, "Fuck off." And I suppose that is hostile, but it wasn't threatening in the sense that it threatened the officer's safety. He had nothing in his hand, according to witnesses Alani Ballowager on the roof of the New Leaf, according to witnesses Michael Schultz and Stacy Buckaloo in a car parked 20 feet away. He had nothing in his hands and was pointing nothing and was not in a combat stance, as the DA and the police chief claimed 15 hours later, according to witness Tom Murphy standing at the corner. And there are other witnesses that we haven't been able to contact, or we've heard from secondhand, who confirm that, or who say that is also true, according to the secondhand information. A woman standing near the muffin shop, actually down from the muffin shop toward the bus stop, about 20 or 30 feet away in the other direction, supposedly said he had nothing in his hand. A man from the phone booth at the Silver Bullet watching said he had nothing in his hands, and not pointing anything at the officers. So there's a lot of testimony that tends to contradict the conclusions of the district attorney and police reports, which, as far as we know thus far, are based on the police officers and the testimony of one witness, Ben Newman, the Catalyst bouncer, who was in the back of the car and was the original complaining witness and has been claimed by some to be a friend and childhood school companion of Officer Carey. And so one would wonder whether his testimony wouldn't be regarded as less disinterested than that of other witnesses, even though perhaps his vantage point was better. Now, in the last 3 days, I have gotten access to testimony from two more witnesses, not directly, indirectly, so it's only tentative. One was the witness in the car, in the truck, sorry, the truck, a pickup truck that was parked directly behind, stopped directly behind the police car, and then drove off when the shots fired, according to the people in the car behind the truck, Stacy and Mike. That witness apparently is a woman, according to my source, a source on the Citizens Police Review Board, I might add, and so not entirely disreputable, who called the Citizens Police Review Board in the days after the shooting and said she was upset and said that she herself saw nothing in his hand and nothing pointed at the police. And she was told by the Police Review Board to go call the DA and tell him that, which I suppose is, in a sense, good news. I mean, you know, sensible advice. And yet, on the other hand, the Citizens Police Review Board has chosen not to hold an emergency session. It has chosen to wait until the police department and the DA's office has concluded with their investigations. And those investigations have ended. They ended on, the 21st and the 24th. The DA's investigation ended before the police department investigation did, at least in terms of their press releases, which we were able to secure copies of. So those investigations are over. The Sentinel reported they were over. And the same conclusions are, as when the investigations began, happened at the conclusion that he was shot. It was justified homicide. It was a case of Officer Connor Carey believing he was threatened by the toy gun in Happy John's hand. But again, because all the witnesses that I have heard of, except for the police officers and the catalyst person, say that there was nothing in his hand, I've been concerned that it seems that a prearranged result may be involved here, or at least that some undue weight is being given to some of the witness testimony. A second witness that came to my attention through two independent sources was an individual who apparently was concerned about remaining anonymous, who crossed the street over to the side of the street where Happy John was, up near the thrift store, and began walking down towards Happy John, and then saw the police car rush past him, saw it skid in, and saw the police officers get out and shoot him. And again, this witness also claims that he saw nothing in the hands of Happy John. He's a young male, and he says his vision is fine, according to, secondary sources. I haven't talked to him directly. Another bit of breaking news is I got a call from the city attorney, John Barisoni, and I heard indirectly from Mayor Celia Scott that the city is prepared to put a copy of the DA's investigation on file at the library when it gets it. And this is really good news. I am reassured by this because I think that it's really important that, more important than the Citizens Police Review Board or even an independent tribunal review this, is that we have access to as much information so we, the citizenry, can review what has happened. I mean, that is really what we need to do. And if this actually is going to happen, and I assume it is, John Barisoni hasn't lied to me before, nor has Celia Scott. I've got plenty of dissatisfaction with both those city officials, but I don't regard them as mendacious, and I think they speak honestly when you ask a question and get an answer to it in that fashion. So I'm hoping that there will be a report. The district attorney's investigation will be on file in the library for us to look at. That, however, should not stop us from pressing for an independent investigation of this issue. I think we'll know more when we're able to look at that report, but I would like to see us get a action from the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday, and that's what I'm going to be urging when I go up to the University of California tonight, where at Kresge College, as you know, there's a police violence forum happening at 8 o'clock. I'm going to be asking all of you who are interested to call the Citizens Police Review Board at 429-3262, 429-3262, and ask them to demand an independent investigation and public hearings straight away. I talked to Catherine Byers today. She said she is willing to support an independent investigation if it comes to her. Now, that's two votes. Byers and Scott are not going to produce an independent investigation. However, it's actually in the city manager's hands. The city manager, according to the CPRB, and I haven't checked the law, but I took this from the staff person of the CPRB, Gary Yamani. He tells me that if the CPRB requests an independent investigation, it's the city manager who says yes or no. Now, whatever the city manager says, the CPRB can still hold public hearings. It can subpoena witnesses without any further ado if it wants to. The problem we have now is a time problem, both on the show, because I have about a minute and a half left, and the problem is going to be when the CPRB comes back on Monday, then Tuesday is the last city council meeting of the month. And that's going to be a real... There's no way to get that in unless there's action taken this week. So I'm going to have to discuss this issue further, possibly in a call-in to another talk show, and I'm hoping to do that, and I'll be discussing it again on Sunday at my show at 11. I'm going to invite you as well on Sunday to join us on the mall at 1 o'clock for a cop watch, which we're going to try to form. And tomorrow night at 125 Sunnyside, they'll be at 7 o'clock at 125 Sunnyside, there will be a meeting of folks interested in starting a cop watch. So if you want to do that, come join us there. If you missed any of these times or dates or numbers, I have a long message on the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, the Huff line, at 423-HUFF. So let me huff and puff on and let Uncle Dennis come on, because he's come in from the rain. He's got some stuff to tell us and some great music, I'm sure, and some great songs. And some other aspects of the world that we have to attend to. Let me thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and sign off with a little music from Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall. Please join me again on Sunday at 11 o'clock. Come to the Cop Watch meeting tomorrow, 7 o'clock at 125 Sunnyside, and sign up to help end the sleeping ban at... I'll give a call to 423-HUFF. That'll help. Or to help investigate the Happy John Dine slang and make sure that that issue is really, truly, and fully aired. Thank you.
In the morning we built the city.
In the afternoon walked through its streets.
Evening saw us leaving.
We wandered through our days as if they would never end. All of us imagined we had endless time to spend. We hardly saw the crossroads and small attention gave to landmarks on the journey from the cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave, cradle to the grave. Did you learn to dream in the morning?
Abandon dreams in the afternoon.
Wait without hope in the evening.
Did you stand there in the traces and let them feed your lies? Did you trail along behind them wearing blinkers on your eyes? Did you kiss the foot that kicked you? Did you thank them for their scorn? Did you ask for their forgiveness for the act of being born, act of being born, act of being born? Did you alter the face of the city?
Make any change in the world you found?
Or did you observe all the warnings? Did you read the trespass notices? Did you keep off the grass? Did you shuffle off the pavement just to let your betters pass? Did you learn to keep your mouth shut? Were you seen and never heard? Did you learn to be obedient and jump to, at a word, jump to, at a word, jump to, at a word?
Did you ever demand any answers?
The who and the what and the reason why?
Did you ever question the setup?
Did you stand aside and let them choose while you took second best? Did you let them skim the cream off and then give to you the rest? Did you settle for the shoddy and did you think it right to let them rob you right and left and never make a fight? Never make a fight, never make a fight. What did you learn?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's time for Earth First Radio.
chainsaws killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race. Mountains by the ton, digging up the uranium. Bald Eagle looking for a place to land, but it's all gone for nuclear plants. Must we poison the water, earth, and air just to cook a piece of toast or blow dry our hair?
In the defense of Mother Earth.